Okay. Good morning, everyone. We can still say good morning. It's 11:45. So we begin a new sefer this week, a whole new book of the five books of the Torah. We're going to start Sefer Shemot. And really, just to give us a little overview on the whole book of Shemot. Book of Shemot can be divided into two sections. The first four or five parashiyot really deal exclusively with the enslavement of the Jewish people and God performing all of the miracles to take Bnei Israel out. In a nutshell, we could call it Yetziat Mitzrayim. That's basically the first four parashiyot, and we could even throw in Parashat Yitro when the Jewish people get the Torah, because the receiving of the Torah and Yetziat Mitzrayim are sort of linked hand in hand. The whole purpose of getting Bnei Israel out of Mitzrayim is so that they can come together as a nation at Har Sinai and to receive the Torah. The second half of Sefer Shemot really deals with the post-giving of the Torah Jewish people, coming together with a lot of laws. We have Parashat Mishpatim, talks about a lot of the details of the Torah, and really then it concludes with the whole building of the Mishkan. So really two parts you can think about it, Yetziat Mitzrayim, and then the formulation of the Jewish people as a nation in the Midbar through the building of the Mishkan. The Sefer ends with God resting His divine presence amongst the Jewish people after the Mishkan is completed. The Ramban famously calls the book of Shemot Sefer HaGalut VeHaGeula. It's the book of exile and redemption. Exile in Egypt, redemption through Yetziat Mitzrayim, and the redemption really doesn't end until the Jewish people receive the Torah and have the Mishkan, and they are formulated as a unit, as a people. So that's just a little bit of a broad, bird's eye view of Sefer Shemot. This week's parasha, we really read about the enslavement of the Jewish people and Hashem choosing Moshe to be the leader of the Jewish people to go down to Paro and to try to get Paro to release the Jewish people from Mitzrayim. We don't read about any of the makot yet in this week's parasha. The plagues are really going to start in the next two parashiyot. It's just the preliminary introduction to Moshe taking the Jewish people out of Mitzrayim. Any questions so far? Okay. So what I want to look at today are some of the early episodes, really one in particular, at the beginning of the enslavement that Paro brings on the Jewish people. When you look and you analyze the text of the Torah gives us an interesting picture of how Paro gets the Jewish people to be enslaved. It's not an overnight process. It seems to be a slow process that occurs in certain stages. First plotting against them, putting taskmasters, getting them to do work for pay, the Midrash says, and then eventually they take away the pay. It's sort of a slow process before the Jewish people all of a sudden wake up one day and say, wait a minute, we're slaves, and there's really nothing they can do about it at that point. It's not a snap of the fingers, it's more of a staged process. And one of those stages is the act of genocide against Jewish children. That's what happens at the very beginning of this week's parasha. It's a very crafty plot on the part of Paro after he puts on taskmasters and he's getting Jewish people to do certain labors for him. He then turns his attention to, how am I going to get the Jewish people to be my slaves? I'm going to have to take care of the next generation. I'm going to have to demoralize the people and really get into the next generation and to avoid any kinds of rebellion against him. So let's take a look at 7 or 8 verses about how Paro creates a genocide against the Jewish children. And let's notice a few things. And then I want to talk about who are the heroes of this particular story. And that's going to lead us to a discussion about some of the heroes in the early parts of these stories amidst all of the darkness and suffering and terrible acts of genocide and enslavement. We have a few personalities that kind of rise to the top as heroes in a very dark time. So just take a look at your pages in front of you. You have 8 pesukim with the English translations. This is the story of the genocide of the Jewish children. Vayomer melech Mitzrayim lam yaledot ha'ivriyot. The king of Egypt spoke to the Hebrew midwives, the miyaledot ha'ivriyot. I'm going to translate that as Hebrew midwives. Asher shem ha'ahat Shifra v'shem ha'shenit Pu'ah. One of them's name was Shifra, the other one was Pu'ah. And what did he tell them to do? He said to them, when you deliver the Hebrew women, look at the birth stool. U'iten al ha'ovnaim. You know, you have to analyze what's happening here. And if you see that im benhu v'hamiten oto, if you see it's a male child, kill the male child. And if it's a female child, v'haya, you can let her live. Paro is targeting all the male children. That's what he's trying to genocide. Why would he be doing that? Why is he trying to target specifically the male children and not just any children altogether? Good. So that's Rashi. We'll call Gloria Rashi for a minute, right? Rashi says that there was a vision, so to speak. The astrologers of Paro saw or predicted that there would be a male redeemer of the Jewish people, and so to combat that,
they didn't want the power.
Who didn't want the power?
Paro. He was afraid that somebody would.
Right, so he's thinking a rebellion is going to come through the men. If I'm able to get rid of all of the men, all of the military force of the Jewish people, I can avoid a rebellion. And that's maybe what the rabbis mean when they say that they see a male redeemer coming up. In other words, the rebellion, the people who are a threat to Paro and his plot are the men. That's what it seems like, yeah.
Also, maybe it could be if you wipe that one gender, you're forcing assimilation.
Good. And which one did he feel was he was more most likely to happen? He was felt it was more likely that the females will assimilate with the males. There's, I guess you could say, he understood the female need to procreate, that they want to have children. And so if there's only females left, they're not going to sit around and go, well, we just won't have children. They're more likely to assimilate, whereas the men might avoid it. I don't know. But he felt that that was necessary to get rid of all of the males, leave only the females, they'll assimilate. Maybe in his mind, the male, if men of Egypt go together with Jewish women, the children will identify more with the father's culture than with the mother's culture. There could have been a lot of differences that were going here, but he feels wiping out one will allow assimilation easy. It removes the threat of rebellion. So there's a very practical idea here behind what Paro is trying to do. Eileen, you look like you had a question.
Is it also easier to just enslave the women? Like it's where they could...
Well, it seems like the opposite. It seems like he's enslaving the men more than... Well,
but can he, as they're alone and not...
He probably doesn't even need to. He probably doesn't even need to enslave the women. Yeah. He probably wouldn't even need to enslave the women because they're not a threat to him, right? It seems like he's enslaving the men because they're a threat. The women, he probably won't even need to enslave them. After a couple of generations, the whole thing will just merge together. So it's a pretty smart plot on the part of Paro. Yeah. Good question. Let's hold that question for a minute because it's going to be the basis of what we're going to discuss over here. Vatirena hamyaledot et ha'eluhim. So the midwives, they fear God. Velo asu, they don't perform as Paro est of them. Vatehayena et ha'eladim. They leave all of the children alive. And so Paro is upset about this. The king of Egypt summoned the midwives and said to them, why have you done this thing, letting the boys live? Why'd you do that? The midwives say to Paro, because the Hebrew women are not like the Egyptian women. Locha nashim ha-mitzriot ha-evriot. They're very different. The plot wasn't going to work. They're not vigorous because the midwife can come and they have given birth. There's a couple of different interpretations here. We'll explain simply. They claimed that the Jewish women didn't need a midwife. And so by the time they got there, the women had already given birth on their own. The children were there and now they're kind of stuck. There's nothing they can do about it once the child has already been born. Vayetev Elohim lam yaledot. God gives good things to the midwives over here. He gives them a reward, and the nation increases and multiplies against Paro's wishes. And because the midwives fear God, he established batim for them. He creates for them batim. This is their reward. Well, they translate it here as households, which is a good translation, but we'll see in a minute what that might mean. And so Paro, frustrated by the fact that the midwives don't follow through with his decree, turns to his whole nation. Paro charged all his people, saying, every boy that is born you shall throw into the Nile, but let every girl live. So, what happens over here? What occurs? There seems to be a gradual shift over here. What was Paro trying to do? We know he was trying to genocide them, but what was he trying to do in the beginning that sort of changed in the end?
Blameless. He wanted to be blameless.
He wanted it to be...
He wanted to be an accident. They were born dead.
Good.
That so maybe it would look like God's hand.
Good.
Not him.
He was trying to cover it up, in other words. Even Paro here at this stage, most people don't realize this when they're reading because they just think, oh, Paro wanted to kill. Yes, it eventually became an overt command to all of the people in Egypt to kill all of the baby boys and to leave the girls alive. But in the beginning, Paro does not want to uncover his plot. He wants it to remain a secret, which is why he turns to the midwives first to say, okay, look at the language in verse 16. It says, when you see them giving birth, Uriten al ha'ovnaim. You're going to look at the birthing stool. The rabbis say over here, he was giving them a sign to determine how you know the child is a male or a female before it actually is born, so that they could strangle the child, kill it before it actually comes out, and then claim to the mother, you gave birth to a stillborn. And in those times, that's a very realistic, very probable thing, in fact, right? In those times, childbirth was always considered a risk. If a woman gave birth to 7 children, maybe 3 of them lived. Having stillborns was constant.
How did you think, like, he could carry this out?
Long enough until they realized it before his plot would take effect, right? If this carried on for long enough, and this is also could explain why he only did the men and not the women, because if he's killed everybody, then it would start to get a little bit fishy. But people are seeing children being born, but it takes them a while to put together that every time it's a boy stillborn and never a girl stillborn, that takes time to piece it together. But it seems like Paro wants it to be covered up. He wants no blame to be attributed to him. He wants this to go under the rug to the point where once it's finished, there's nothing anybody can do about it, right? Maddie, look, I get a question. Who? Doesn't say that he did. Doesn't say that he did.
They essentially went against the king.
Correct. They absolutely defied his decree. They give an excuse for it, right? Mm-hmm. But I would contend, why did Paro even ask them, why did you do this, right? To offer them an excuse. He should have realized they're not doing it. Should have brought them in and punished them. It's pretty obvious why the midwives are not carrying out Paro's plot. If you're Paro, why are the midwives not carrying out your plot? Why would they not carrying it out? They don't want to kill babies. They don't want to kill their own people, right? Right? It seems like that they don't want to do this. So that seems very basic. So it's a little bit strange why Paro brings them in, asks them a question. Why are you not doing this? That would seem to be obvious to us. And then they offer up a pretty lame excuse. No, the Jewish women are not like the regular women. We got there, they were already giving birth. And nothing happens to them as a consequence. See, Paro finally at the end give a sweeping decree to all of his people, kill all of the males, and leave all of the females around.
Is there a difference
between males and females? No, not in this case. I wouldn't think so. I mean, by my understanding, no. Why it's using Melech Mitzrayim versus Paro might be an interesting concept. That's something that I might expect the Malbim maybe to look at. But I didn't look into it. Melech Mitzrayim and Paro here would probably be, at least by my understanding, synonymous. Maybe there's something there to it, but I didn't explore anything like that. So all of these questions lead to an interesting, bigger question, and let's see what we say. Who are these midwives? Okay, that's the answer I was looking for, right? Because again, we're all taught at a very young age, the Midrash. This is how the rabbis look at it. There's the Gemara, Masechet Sota, Rashi brings it as well, that these two midwives are really Yocheved and Miriam. They're called Shifra and Pu'ah. They're given these names, even though their real names are Yocheved and Miriam, for various reasons. Shifra, from the language that she says of Meshaperet, they took care of the baby after the child is born. After the child is born, needs to be wiped down, needs to be given certain care and certain things. That was Yocheved's job. Pu'ah was the one who gave the signs of quieting the child down, trying to get rid of the child's anxiety after it's being born, to kind of bring peace into the home, I guess you could say. So these are Shifra and Pu'ah. They're really Yocheved and Miriam. They're given code names over here based on some of their actions as they're giving birth to the children, as they're birthing, I should say, the mothers. And really, they are Hebrew midwives. They are Jewish people who are the midwives. And that has a lot of validity in the text, because if you look at the bolded words in verse 15, Lamyaledot ha'ivriyot, which could literally be translated as the Miyaledot, the midwives ha'ivriyot, who were Jewish, who were Hebrews. That's the way that it seems that the Rashi is explaining it, that Ramban is explaining it, that Rashbam is explaining it. Many of the medieval commentaries go with this from a grammatical perspective. And I think also there'll be something deeper that the Midrash wants to teach us in this context, which we'll come to in a minute. But yeah.
So maybe he's just trying
Who is?
Haram.
Well, how would this be doing that?
Meaning instead of just, the way you said, punishing them or just assuming that they did bad by him, he gave them a chance to kind of, like, he wanted to see if, like, meaning he chose the Hebrew midwives for a reason.
Why?
I guess because he knows that, well, they're the ones that are going to be delivering the Jewish babies.
Meaning that the mothers are comfortable with them.
Or they're assigned to them.
Okay.
So, but obviously he has some kind of feeling or inclination that, like, the hand of God is involved, because, like Tim Gorey said, meaning, I think you said that, because I had a phone call, sorry. You said how come you wanted to save only the boys and not the girls?
Right, because they saw that there was going to be a redeemer who was male.
Right, and Jewish.
And Jewish, well, yeah.
So then I think he needs to see if the hand of God is involved.
So you're saying he appointed the Hebrew midwives, A, for a practical reason, because they're the ones who are in charge. So that could just be a very logistical idea. And those are the ones that the mothers are comfortable with, so maybe they won't suspect anything. And they chose them also to see something, if his plan would actually be successful, then what would he be able to gather from that? That God was okay with what he was doing? Or...
In other words, he's asking, why didn't my plan work? He's asking the midwives, why, I told you to do something and you didn't do it, why didn't you do it? But he's trying to see, in other words, was there something supernatural that was involved that you weren't able to, that you didn't do what I asked
you? Oh, you're saying that question, that's not necessarily why he appointed the Hebrew midwives, but once they were appointed and he sees that it's not happening, he's trying to know, is there something supernatural over here? That's an interesting perspective of his question. That would explain why he's questioning them, even though he probably understands why it's happening. Meaning it didn't have to do with the midwives, it had to do something with God. That could be an interesting perspective, yeah.
So on that same line, does Pharaoh have an underlying fear of Moshe's God? Does he fear Moshe's God in a way that he's going to get repercussions? He seems to go very underhanded. He seems to go very cautiously when he does these things.
Yes, it seems as though Paro has a few things, I think, that are playing a role here. I don't know if it's God necessarily at this stage. Right, but he doesn't know Moshe yet. This is before that story takes place. But I think it could be, I think a little bit could have to do with Yosef. We're not too far away removed from Yosef and the brothers. The Jews had a very strong standing. They saved Mitzrayim. So Paro has to walk a little bit of a fine line when he wants to treat the Jews in an inhumane kind of way. They could get some backlash from his people who say, hey, don't do this to the Jews, they saved us, right? He has to wait for that to cool off a little bit before he can be able to do it. So that might be one thing that's going on psychologically to Paro that causes him to do it. Another, I think, is just a practical idea. He feels that if he exposes his whole plot in one shot, he realizes the moral implications of his plot. People might not want to feel uncomfortable going along with it until he gets them a little bit far gone, and then he's able to really push them to the brink, to the max.
What made him believe that these two women would really do it? What was his relationship with them? If they're these loving women who are birthing all these children, why would they be killing the men?
Yeah.
That's an excellent question. I don't know what would give him the idea, right? Other than fear of punishment, which is ironic because we don't see that they get any kind of punishment. But that these kinds of questions that we're asking about, what would he expect them to do? Why is there no punishment? I think leads to a very different interpretation of this story. One that's not necessarily in line with the Midrash. So for a second, let's just put the Midrash on the side that these women were Jewish women and they were Yocheved and Miriam. And take a look at commentary number in source number 2. This is a commentary of a man by the name of, they call him Shadal. His name is Shmuel David Luzzatto. He was an Italian scholar, okay? So of Sephardic origin. He was Italian. And he lived in about 1865. And so he has a very different perspective. So he has a little bit of a bird's eye view because he has other commentaries in front of him. Look what he writes, and I copied it here in English. He writes, the Hebrew midwives, Hamyaledot HaIvriot, the understanding of our sages of blessed memory, and Onkelos and Rashbam and Ramban, so he quotes many sources, is that those midwives were from the seed of Israel. While the understanding of Don Yitzchak, who was known as the Abarbanel, who was a Sephardi commentary in the late 1300s, is that they were Egyptian. That these women were not Jewish women. They were Egyptian women.
These midwives, is that they were Egyptian, these midwives of the Hebrews. And this is right, he says. I like this explanation. Since how does it make any sense that Paro would order Jewish women to destroy all of the children of their own people and believe that they won't reveal such a thing? If Paro has an underlying secret plot over here that he wants to enslave the Jewish people and he's going to start by killing off the next generation and he wants that to remain a secret and he wants it to be carried out, who's more likely to carry out that plot? Would it be women of the Jewish people and not reveal anything even if they did carry it out? Or would it be women of his own people? It's more likely, says Shaddal, that it would be women of his own nation that would be willing to carry that out and keep it a secret as well. And he brings more proof. He says, and what is proved by the phrase, the midwives fear God, is no proof at all. So now they ask the question, well, then how come it says that they feared God? Well, the Egyptian women might not fear God. The Jewish women are the ones who fear God. He says, no, since it is not written here Hashem, it doesn't use the unique name of God, Yod Hey Vav Hey, the way it does by when it talks about Jewish people. It uses the name Elohim. And that is a general term for any kind of authority figure or any kind of God that a person might have. So it could be that these Egyptian midwives didn't fear God as we would think, the Jewish God, but they feared whatever God they believed in. But that fear instilled in them caused them not to behave in a certain way. And everyone who has a God would fear killing babies that did not sin at all, whatever people they are from. And an example of this is what is said regarding Amalek. And he attacked you in the rear, and you were tired and exhausted, and he did not fear Elohim. By Amalek, one of the things that make us so anti-Amalek is that Amalek attacked us in a cowardly fashion from the back. They killed the tired and the weak. They attacked children, they attacked women who generally don't fight. And what does the Torah say about them? Velo yare Elohim. They did not fear Elohim, which doesn't necessarily mean that they had to fear, but they didn't have that inborn human fear of morality, right? Human beings will fear doing an act that is immoral, that by most human being standards we know is immoral, not because they fear God necessarily, but they fear their own humanity. They fear a higher being or higher authority. Amalek didn't have that. These women did have that, but it's not shocking that they would have such a thing. We can understand where it comes from. It's very noble and heroic that they do, but it's not shocking or incomprehensible that they would have that. And he further says, and my dear student, Rabbi Yaakov Chai Pardo, okay, so now you know where the Pardo family, they're an Italian family, may the tzaddik's memory bring blessings to us, adds that if they were from another people, it made more sense to say they did this out of fear and not of love. Right? If it was really the Jewish women, you would say the Jewish women loved their own kind and they did it out of love for their people. That's not what it says over here. It says they feared doing it out of a higher authority. Since if they were Jewish, what need would there be to remind us that they feared God? Since all humans love the children of their own people. So again, these are little things that Shaddal is noticing that point him in the opposite direction, that these are actually Egyptian women. I'll finish with the last point that he says, and then we'll put it all together. And I say that Paro did not want to talk to all the midwives at once, since if all of them would kill all the Israelite babies at one moment, the thing would be known and publicized. And if just two of them were going around killing them, and not all the other midwives, others could say it was an accident, and he thought to order all the midwives in small groups so that the matter would not be known if it had worked with these first two. So Shaddal adds in a side point that we didn't mention, which is, how could two midwives control all of the Jewish people, all of the Jewish women that are there? Clearly Shaddal says it had to be that there were more midwives. These were probably the two heads of the agency, so to speak, and Paro was very crafty. Rather than call all of the midwives and get everybody to do it, which is much harder, he instructed the top two to slowly tell one at a time, here and there, to do the plot before he got everybody involved. Right? So again, it was a very gradual, very slow-moving process that Paro was trying to put into place. So all of this evidence, I think, points very strongly towards Shaddal's explanation, that to me it makes a lot more sense. I think the Midrash has a specific, I don't want to use the word agenda, it's a negative kind of connotation, but the Midrash has a specific point or perspective that it wants to illustrate by saying that these women were Hebrew women. I think what the Midrash is trying to bring forth is Paro had a very specific intention in mind when he hired Jewish women, if we go with that explanation. He wanted to demoralize the Jewish people. This is something that many people who try to attack the Jewish people, many leaders, we'll mention just Hitler, Yimach Shemo, and the Nazis did this to perfection. They took Jewish people, said, we'll take care of you as long as you kill and you hurt your own kind. They got the Jews to do the dirty work on their own people so that they could keep their hands kind of clean of anything that they would do, or just make life easier to them, or demoralize the Jewish people when you see your own people killing members of their own nation. They did this with kapos, they did this with all kinds of different tactics. Paro could be doing this as well. He says, I'm going to enslave your people and I'm going to make you guys be the ones to kill your own people. It was a demoralization tactic on the part of Paro. That, I think, is what the Midrash is trying to show. And many non-Jewish enemies have tried to copy that. And it's trying to bring forth the heroism of Yocheved and Miriam, who the Midrash says were these midwives, of not giving into that, of what you should do when someone puts your life on the line to attack another Jew. You should give it up. You should be willing to sacrifice yourself and look at the reward that you receive. I think that that's a very noble idea that the Midrash is trying to paint by putting Paro as using Jews to attack other Jews. That's one thing. I think, though, if you look at the simple text of the Torah over here, I think that it makes more sense, according to what Shaddal is saying, that these were actually non-Jewish women. It makes sense from a context perspective that Paro would entrust them with the responsibility of killing the Jews. It makes sense why he then later called them in and asked them, why didn't you do what I asked you to do? Why is he asking that question? Because he's talking to his own Egyptians. You guys are supposed to be loyal to me. Why is it that you're not doing it? Yeah, and he doesn't punish them, right? And then he says, okay, I'm not going to punish you. Why does he let them go off the hook? He buys their explanation. He buys what they have to say, that, oh, the Jewish women gave birth and we couldn't do it. We couldn't just walk in and kill them. We couldn't figure it out. And so we were stuck. There's nothing we can do. You told us to keep it a secret. We had no choice. So he buys that explanation. And so I think all of those things, all those elements kind of point to the fact that it makes a lot of sense that they were non-Jewish, that they were Egyptian midwives who were in charge or being placed upon birthing the Jewish women. Yeah.
But if Shaddal is proving it by saying that it uses the word Elohim mm-hmm. instead of Hashem's name, then why in the later pasuk does it say that Elohim also, Vayasehem Batim? Like, why shouldn't it say God's name?
Meaning there you're saying it's referring to what we know is the true Hashem, so to speak. That's an interesting question. It could be that once the text kind of started with that perspective, it keeps that language going, and at least maybe from their own perspective. This could be how they looked at it objectively. Or it could be that over here it's talking about the God of justice, meaning that it was due to them. They got it back. Midah keneged midah, Hashem rewarded them for their actions. It's interesting. I'll take a look. I didn't look through Shaddal on that pasuk. Maybe he mentions something about that. But I think once the Torah kept with that language, I think it kept that language going, so to speak. Yeah.
So I like this interpretation. I completely agree with it once hearing it. But mm-hmm. It's just disconcerting to hear that Rashi was wrong.
It doesn't mean that he was wrong. Again, so what's very important to understand when you look at multiple interpretations is that nobody is wrong. In fact, both, our rabbis tell us very often, both interpretations can be upheld, right? The language is specifically cryptic. If you go back to the pasuk that started it all, Meyaledot ha'ivriyot, that could be interpreted grammatically in two ways. The midwives of the Hebrews, but they weren't Egyptian, or you could consider them the Hebrew midwives, who they themselves are Hebrew. The text is purposely ambiguous. Why? Because it wants to leave it open for the possibility of multiple interpretations. What the real point is, it's not 100% clear. It could go really either way. But you gain something by the Torah doing this, you gain from both perspectives. If you look at it through the Midrash's perspective, you gain a tremendous understanding of nationalism and what it means to be part of the Jewish nation. How never let another enemy separate you from who you are and your people. Don't allow that fear to allow you to go out of your moral standing and attack your own nation. On the flip side, I think, right, some people might look at it as, well, now it's a real downer. We're not talking about Jewish women, we're talking about non-Jewish women. From my perspective, I think it's an even greater lesson. It actually raises the bar over here, right? The Torah is telling us that when it comes to moral action, it doesn't matter who you are, it doesn't matter what nation you belong to. Look at these heroic women who, because of their moral standing and their love for humanity, decided not to go along with the plot of their king and give in, although who knows what rewards may have been lying from them from Paro. Who knows what Paro would have given them for that, and they choose not to remove themselves from their human moral standing to kill little children. And by the way, they get it back, midah keneged midah. There's an interesting explanation over here. Vayas lahem batim. They made for them households. So Rashi, in keeping with his interpretation that it's Yocheved and Miriam, says, what was the reward? They got houses of being Kohanim, who comes from Yocheved and Miriam, Aharon HaKohen. So all the Kohanim come from her. They get the house of Levi, who comes from them. They're from the tribe of Levi. Moshe. Moshe is the head of the tribe of Levi. And all of the Levim come from their tribe as well. So they get a lot of positive things as a result of that. But you could also say, if we interpret them as being non-Jewish women, what does it mean, vayas lahem batim? So I saw an interesting explanation that says, very often, who are the women who become midwives? Which kinds of women become midwives? Women who can't have children themselves. So what do? They want to be part of the process of birthing children, so they go into the profession and they become midwives to help others give birth because they can't give birth. And as a result of that, what did God do? Vayas lahem batim. Because of their sacrifice, God allowed them to have children. God allowed these midwives who took the position when they couldn't have children to be able to have children. Midah keneged midah. So the text, I think, here is coming to highlight the heroism of human beings, not necessarily Jewish people. If you go with the Midrash, you're kind of stuck with, okay, Jews took care of Jews. It's a great lesson, but I think the Midrash is going, the Pshat over here is going maybe a step further, of human beings taking care of human beings in the face of immoral acts by other human beings. And that to me is a very, very potent lesson, a very significant idea. And to add a little bit more to that, the next story does the same thing. Because what's the next story right after this? It's the story of Moshe being put in the Nile River. Who saves Moshe? The daughter of Paro, right? Another non-Jewish woman, by the way. Notice every one of these characters is women. It seems as though the text is highlighting us that this inborn morality, this human light, this desire for human life is something that women have a much stronger drive for than men necessarily, right? Which is ironic that Paro then would want to kill all of the men and leave the women alive, right? He thought he could get rid of this nation by getting rid of the men and leaving the women. It actually became the exact opposite, right? Our rabbis say because of the women, that's why we were able to build ourselves as a nation. He didn't understand the tremendous role that women play in building a nation. And so it's a woman later in the next story, again, another non-Jewish woman who is the daughter of Paro, right underneath Paro's own nose. Her maidservants tell her, you of all people have to keep to the decree of the king. You're the own, even if everybody else ignores it, you're his daughter. You have to keep to it. And she has compassion. She saves Moshe. She takes care of him. She lets Miriam do and Yocheved take care of the child and raise them up. And then she raises him as his own, as her own. And so I think the number of these stories in the introduction to Shemot are pointing us to humanity and what it means to love human beings, what it means to be respectful of human life. And all of that, by the way, brings us to Moshe Rabbeinu. So if you take all of these pieces together, you have the Midrash who says Yocheved and Miriam were the ones who were the Milialedot over here. The next story is Bat Paro, the daughter of Paro. Moshe is a product of all of these women. He's a biological son of Yocheved and Miriam. Not Miriam. He's a biological son of Yocheved, biological sibling of Miriam. That's that. And he's the adopted son of Bat Paro. Moshe grows up in a home with women who teach him the value of human life, who teach him sensitivity and morality. It's in his DNA and it's in his upbringing, even in the house of Paro. And so when we get to Moshe saving the Jew from his friend, saving the Jew from another Mitzri, we're not surprised that Moshe acts this way. We're not surprised that Moshe becomes the supreme leader of the Jewish people to take them out of Mitzrayim, that he has this sensitivity for human beings and human life, despite growing up in the palace as a prince. We're not surprised because it's built into his DNA. It's who he is. It's how he grew up from all of these stories. These stories become an introduction to how Moshe got to be the person that he was and how it got to be that he had those character traits that God chose and saw in him to be the eventual redeemer of the Jewish people. So I guess to bring it to close, the key here that we're seeing is Derash perspective, an interpretation perspective, both of these teach us great lessons. Both of these interpretations are valid. They have a lot of source in the text, and each one can answer certain parts of the details. Both are perfectly acceptable. Each one gives us different perspective. The Midrash, that it was Jewish women, showing that you have to have sensitivity towards your people, that you have to always be connected to your roots and who you are, and never to allow enemies and fear to get in between that. And we see the rewards of that. And also from the non-Jewish perspective of loving humanity, being moral, upstanding human beings, even in the darkest of situations. And yeah.
Beautiful. I love that. It brought to mind what we were talking about the last few weeks about Yosef and how Yosef wasn't necessarily, I don't even want to use the word worthy, but in the cycle it took him. And maybe that has to do with he was brought up with, you know, his mother died, and he wasn't, his early childhood wasn't brought up, it was more a man's world, 12 tribes and his father, and it took him so much more to, you know, you used to talk about his rise and fall, until he worked, his character traits were refined enough to be a leader.
That's valid. You could say that Yosef did not benefit from the greatest of childhoods because he lacked a mother for a long time, and because there was a rift in his family and his father favored him. Definitely, his upbringing could have a lot to do with his journey to become the person that he was made to become, for sure. Absolutely. I think that's it. Everyone have a great day.